Welcome to Behind the Curtain with me, Rhiannon Carrs. Today I am delighted to be joined by Justine Greening. So Justine is a former cabinet minister, having served as Secretary of State for Education and also previously for Transport and International Development. She brings a wealth of experience, a lot of which we'll be covering this in this conversation, spanning from government to business, and perhaps most importantly, to real social impact. Since stepping away from frontline politics, she's been leading some of the most exciting thinking, I'd say, in the UK, around how organisations can be a genuine force for good. So she's founder and chair of the Purpose Coalition. For those of you that don't know, that's a powerful and growing alliance of businesses, universities, public sector organisations and social enterprises as well, all working together to break down barriers to opportunity. The coalition is focused on turning purpose into practical action, particularly around education, skills, social mobility and place, and showing how doing the right thing can go hand in hand with long-term business success. We're actually especially proud to be having this conversation because Curtains is a partner, in fact, a founding member of the Purpose Coalition. And we share that ambition to create meaningful social value alongside great work for clients and communities. Justine, thank you for joining us. It's fantastic to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So can we just start with telling us a little bit about you and your background?
Well, we're sat in Manchester today, but I actually grew up on the other side of the Pennines, just outside Sheffield in Rotherham. And yeah, just went to my local school. Nobody in my family was involved in politics. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something in business, although I didn't really know what business was, but it looked exciting. And so, yeah, realised I needed to get as good an education as I could. Wanted to go to university because that felt like the stepping stone most people took to get a good job. Mm-hmm. Didn't really know what that destination might look like. Certainly never expected it to include a journey into politics. But yeah, ultimately, I get into my career and it's all going great. I'm you know, a finance person by training, but I just love doing stuff in my local community. And I think maybe for me, growing up, when I did in the 80s, I just saw a lot of people unemployed, a lot of talent going to waste. Part of that was my dad's talent. He was unemployed for quite a while. And I think that just left a mark on me to feel that if there was something I could do to help people connect up to opportunities, then that would be a really important thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you kind of track it back to childhood and those really, really early motivators that so often go on to like shape who you are, how you think, 100%. And where you sort of spend your time and your focus and your energy.
Yeah, and I think it does all go back to that. Mm-hmm. I hated seeing my dad not going out to work because nobody would literally pay him to do anything because he was a talented bloke. But I think what also came out of that for me was just how important businesses are, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And he lost his job when British Steel wasn't making money, not when it was. And so I think I just got this really early look at how employers create opportunities. And it's a really basic, obvious thing, but everybody in those opportunities is able to take that next step in their life. And so I think that was part of why, having stepped back from politics, it was really about coming back to this thing that perhaps drove me into politics in the first place.
Interesting. So can you talk us through then the Purpose Coalition? I think, you know, we've worked together for a long time within the Purpose Coalition and formerly the Social Mobility Pledge. Can you tell us a bit more about, I suppose, what drove you to begin that movement, what it means to you and what it looks like today?
I think part of it was I wanted to do a campaign on social mobility. I wanted employers to think a lot more strategically about just how important their roles are in transforming lives. And at the same time as I did that campaign, it was called the Social Mobility Pledge, and I got it going. I left cabinet to do it, actually, because I just felt it was easier to do it outside than inside.
Interesting.
Interestingly, I tried to do it when I was education secretary, and I remember having a conversation with the CBI, and they said, oh, we can't really get involved in a campaign.
Okay.
So it's this crazy situation where I'm able to do this social mobility pledge campaign, but only when I've stopped being in a position of power in cabinet, weirdly. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it went brilliantly. And I was meeting all these businesses like Curtains who just have their own ideas around what they're doing in social mobility, have a different sense of where they sit in their local communities, trying different stuff. And I wanted to bring them all together. And part of it was just a really human thing where I'd kind of sit in my office and think, do you know, I'd really love so-and-so of this company to meet so-and-so of that company, because they'd really get on. Mm-hmm. I realised that I was coming across all these really like-minded business leaders who were like-minded with me. They were probably me had I stayed in business instead of getting elected. And I just thought, oh, I've got to bring them together, because it just felt like there was too many great ideas, too much energy to waste. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the Purpose Coalition. It's just bringing together people who are all on the same page, who care about social mobility, who want their organisations to stand for something that actually matters more broadly. It's bringing them together to say, right, what can you do and what can we do together? And how can we really share some of this brilliant thinking with a wider country that really needs solutions?
Yeah, one of the things that I've really reflected on since being kind of in those rooms, I suppose, where we're having those conversations, is whilst we come from completely different walks of life, you know, we're in a room where you've got businesses with tens of thousands of members of staff, with Curtains who have just over 400, and kind of everything in between, is it's actually how common some of those challenges are. And those things that we're kind of talking about and wrestling with in the boardroom, it kind of doesn't matter almost what your business is, or whether you're making flip-flops or steel beams in a huge school. It's kind of like they're very, very similar on a very kind of human level. And I think one of the benefits is just being able to share the challenges as well as the ideas as well.
Yeah, and fundamentally, businesses are people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they are a group of people trying to do something. And it starts and ends with talent, really. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't get the best talent, then you're not going to have the best business. And if you don't get the most diverse thinking, you're not going to have the best solutions. And so that's the commonality. And I think also there's a common sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. I think it's about it's a whole group of organizations who understand that people want to come into them and achieve things, mm-hmm. not just for themselves with their own career, but achieve stuff for a wider community, a wider country, maybe achieve things for their customers' lives. And I think it's just that sense of purpose. That's why we called it the Purpose Coalition. It might take a different form for different companies or different universities. You've got colleges part of it, NHS trusts, so it's not even just private sector. But I think they all have a sense that they need to have a bigger impact than just a tactical one for their own sake.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you kind of first, approached Curtains, I don't know if we've ever had this conversation before. I'm really interested. What was it about Curtains that made you think, oh, okay, maybe they could get involved with Purpose Coalition? And then I suppose, continuing, what have you kind of experienced? What have you observed from Curtains from your perspective?
I think part of it was just the fact that the projects you do, mm-hmm. literally shape the lives, the environment that we're all part of. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's so easy to forget how important that is. And, you know, I grew up in and around Sheffield. I live in London. These are amazing cities, you know, where you look and see what the Victorians did, and that imprint is still there. And so I think what Curtains does in and of itself is hugely important. Mm-hmm. But also, there was definitely this sense of a DNA, a culture, an ethos. I don't think at the beginning I realised it was an employee-owned trust, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. But it was the founder story of what Bill mm-hmm. Curtin did all that time ago. It was the place-based side of it. It was how he clearly was a particular kind of person.
Yeah.
Who maybe slightly kicked back against most other people who'd go into setting up a business like he did and thought, well, I want to do it this way. And I think that first almost emotion of his is setting up the business and how he wanted it to create opportunities and do these great projects. I feel like that was almost so profound. You know, you talked about me and my childhood, and it's almost like it's had this, that imprint on the organisation ever since.
Yeah.
Like it was, it was such a big part of his thinking that it's never stopped echoing.
Yeah.
Even absolutely. Though it's years later.
Yeah, it's really, I think that's so interesting that you know, that's almost stayed alive for you as well, because it feels very alive when you're in the organisation. You know, we still talk about Bill. We talk about Bill and his wife, Ella, and, you know, his daughter, his granddaughter, his great-grandsons. You know, they're very alive when you are within that Curtin's DNA. But I love the idea that actually that that's kind of echoed outside as well. It's what people see when they look in, because it does shape us. It does shape how we see our responsibility, I think, on the decisions that we make, and whether that's engineering decisions and responsible engineering and having a lasting legacy that has a positive impact on those communities, or whether that's business decisions, you know, whether that's becoming employee owned, for example, or setting up our academy and nurturing the talent from a, you know, right the way from apprenticeships and graduates fresh out of university. It really does shape how we operate. And I think very directly as well, you know, it's not something that's intangible. He's quoted in board meetings, you know, what would Bill do? How would he approach this? And we're very privileged, I think, as a business who's, you know, 65 years of history, 66 this year. Some people will have really lost that, I think, that kind of connection to their founder. Whereas we say you're only ever kind of like two steps away from Bill because of the nature of the business, where people have been, you know, part of the team for literally their whole careers.
There's definitely this sense as well. Obviously, Neil's CEO now, of almost whoever's in that role, it's almost like they're also a custodian of something somehow. Mm-hmm. They're not just taking the company forward to be successful. It's almost like it's got to be even more than that, because the organisation itself really matters. And I remember when I was in Curtin's talking to some of the employees who were part of the employee-owned trust and the governance, and it was really interesting to see their sense of what it means being part of the business.
Yeah.
Because of their role in it and how it was maybe different to other places that they'd worked at. And, you know, I remember going home that evening reflecting how I absolutely would have run towards working at that kind of company when I was in my 20s. But weirdly, I think like many people who go into business, you're almost conditioned to think, oh, you're not allowed to worry about that stuff, when actually it turns out that stuff, the culture, how it feels to be at a place, that is what makes it sustainable for the long run. You know, you can often make a profit 1 year. If you want to keep doing it and keep growing and keep getting customers, it's how people feel about the organisation that matters the most.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been spending quite a lot of time talking about is what it means to kind of like act like an owner, feel like an owner.
Yeah.
You know, what does that actually look like in really kind of like practical, tangible terms? Because I think sometimes it can feel quite nebulous, this idea of like, am I really an owner of Curtin's? And what does that mean? And we've really tried to kind of understand what that means for different people in the business. And it's decisions like, I don't know, how you spend the money. So when you're booking your train ticket, like, try and make sure you think about booking your train ticket 3 weeks in advance rather than the day before, because you send a few, you know, you save a few quid. And there's two things that can happen with that money. It either goes directly back into the business and it gets reinvested, or it's part of the profit share at the end of the year. So it's getting people to think about that on those kind of micro decisions, but also the macro, how we look after our clients. You know, we call it the Curtin's way. Mm-hmm. So what can our clients expect when they're working with Curtin's? And it is that deeper level of caring. Like, I do think that's ultimately what it comes down to, because it's personal. And I think if we can, you know, we work quite hard to try and, you know, get that to click with people, and also to attract people to the business where they go, yeah, actually, that feels like
that's
a bit of
you.
Me.
Yeah, and do you feel like for your clients, they have to buy into it as well. In a weird way, it's like a date where you've got to think, look, there's a match here, mm-hmm. because this is what matters to us, and we need some of that same value set to be there for our clients.
I would definitely say the most successful client relationships, the ones where we've seen that repeat business, mm-hmm. the ones where we've seen the relationship on a very human level kind of connection, mm-hmm. That's when they've completely value aligned, mm-hmm. with us. And we quite often will get people saying, oh, can you come in and talk to us about employee ownership? Like, what that means, how you did it, how you kind of established that successfully. Because I think quite a few people and businesses, from, you know, quite small businesses to quite established ones, are thinking, actually, this is a vehicle to a really successful, and I mean, you know, commercially successful business model.
I felt the other piece of it that really struck me was, it's just great development for people, because they're confronted with, like you say, sometimes tactical decisions about cost control, but, you know, welcome to finance.
Yeah.
and sometimes strategic questions about retention, and they're thinking about all of those day to day in a way that probably if you were maybe more junior down a big organization somewhere else, actually, you know, you're just there to, you know, for the moment, do your role, and maybe you'll get exposure to that kind of stuff later on in your career. That's the other thing that I really liked about the employee-owned trust piece. I just thought, yeah, I've loved sort of understanding how it all ran sooner in my career.
What we find as well is the members of the team who feel particularly satisfied, content. We see them really progressing in their career recurrence. They're the ones that embrace that. They're the ones that, you know, whether they've been with us, you know, 3 weeks, 3 days, whether they're in their early 20s and it's their first experience of working in industry, or whether actually they've perhaps been at other places for a number of years and they're new to Curtains, it's the people that go, actually, yeah, I know I've got a voice and I'm going to use it. That's when we see people really thriving at Curtains.
And that then comes back to your diversity point, question, challenge, which is, yeah, why would you want any of those brilliant ideas stuck in someone's head when it could be birthed to an outside world and, you know, having an impact? And that's sort of what I always felt when I was in government. You know, I want the ideas, because even if they don't come out as an initially perfect form one, maybe there's something in there that actually is going to be really impactful. And I would always say to officials or actually to, you know, people, I'd knock on doors and they'd tell me what their thoughts were. They say, oh, you know, it doesn't really matter. And I'd always say, look, the thing is, nothing ever changes until there's always one person who's that first person to say, actually, I've got an idea.
And
you want to build an organisation where it's full of people saying, I've got an idea.
Yeah, I've got an idea. Or even sometimes before the idea, it's just the question, why?
Yes, yeah, yeah, why are we doing it that way?
Why are we doing it like this? Why are we doing it that way? What you've brought me to there actually is the challenge that's kind of identified as one of our ongoing challenges, both as a business and as an industry, and we've got it as a kind of strategic priority for the board, is around gender representation. It is something that kind of comes up time and time again, and we're not seeing that shift at the pace that we would like to see it. And Curtains are doing some brilliant things to attract women to the business, and we're kind of seeing that we are ahead of the curve in terms of comparison to the industry. But it remains, you know, one of our single challenges, and absolutely is a barrier to that diversity of thought that we know that we need for that commercial edge and embracing and identifying kind of innovation. I'm dead interested to hear like your reflections, particularly, I guess, as a woman working in politics. Any kind of best practice, any kind of things that you've identified that you think, hang on a minute, that's what's made a difference?
I think it's so interesting if you do look at politics, because actually you've got these two, well, they were big parties, maybe they won't be bigger parties going forward, but Labour and Conservative, and actually they tried different experiments on getting more women involved. So for Labour, they went down a, you know, quite a prescriptive approach and said, right, we're really going to make sure our shortlists have women on. How we'll kind of build the pipeline. We're going to disproportionately make sure women are in it. For the Conservatives, it was much more of a culture thing. Right. We need to get women to want to
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
do this. And so between them, they probably both had a great strategy, mm-hmm. in a sense. And actually, for both parties were different organisations. So maybe they did it in their way. But in the end, they've all ended up, if you like, breaking the back, I think, of the big debate on getting more women in Parliament. I would say the challenge for politics now is not that it's unusual to have women involved. Actually, that's really routine. I think it's how do you get it to be more 50-50? Mm. Because the big risk is that in the case of Parliament, I feel like often on gender, it gets up to about 30%, 35%, and then it seems to get stuck. So mm-hmm. maybe the evidence is telling us that last piece of the change process is really the hardest. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's where culture comes. It's around transparency and measurement. I introduced the gender pay gap because mm-hmm. I just thought there is no other way to really find out what's going on.
Yeah, and hold businesses accountable as well. And yeah. I do think that it forces that.
Yeah, I'm a non-exec director, and certainly it makes us look at our performance as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I was still in government now, Rhiannon, I'd probably be doing gender pay gap 2.0. I think I'd be looking at how I could refresh it to give it a new momentum. So I think there's a bit about measurement. There's a huge bit about culture. There's a bit about understanding that at every stage of the pipeline, you need these relatable role models.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bit about not just building the pipeline, but making sure people are in it. And that, you know, you think about some of the stuff you're doing on teacher placements, STEM and schools. It's just essential, because if you can't see it, you can't be it. And that means helping teachers understand what those careers are, but that they are open to everyone, if you like, not just boys.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you're right. So we're launching the STEM teacher placement program with you guys at the Purpose Coalition. And that is all about the ripple effect, isn't it? That is all about, and I suppose that comes back to, Curtains, we're not an enormous organisation. We know that we can't go out and have the impact of, some of our peers, some of our competitors, who are tens of thousands of people strong. So we've always tried to look at things a little bit differently and say, right, with the resources, the time, the capacity, the energy that we've got, what can have the biggest impact? And I think, you know, this teacher placement programme is a new idea that came to us a couple of years ago. And we thought, what if instead of bringing students in to the business for a week or 2 weeks or a summer placement, we looked at bringing a teacher in, thinking about how impactful a teacher's kind of, I suppose, influence can be within that classroom, not just on one or two students, and potentially like not just one or 2 years, but it could be kind of a really kind of lasting impression that can be made. So yeah, we're kind of formally launching this, where we're bringing teachers in to the business. They're spending time with our technical teams. So yes, looking at careers in engineering, but also in finance, in marketing, in IT, in HR, and all part of that construction industry. And I suppose the main benefit of that really is breaking down some of those barriers that are often, I think, ones created around the dinner table. You know, I think families have a perception of, you know, what a career in engineering might look like. And we're just trying to say, yeah, it can do, but also it doesn't have to. And it's really just trying to start that conversation that people, and particularly girls, go, actually, maybe this is somewhere where I could feel really fulfilled. Maybe my skills do align with engineering. It's really exciting, isn't it?
I think it's such a brilliant idea, and I love this reverse logic that yes, it's great when employers go into schools, but I love the idea, and it's why I love doing the Purpose Coalition, because you get this innovation. I love the idea of bringing a teacher into Curtains and giving them chance to really see what you do. And I always felt, when I was education secretary, it is hard to get teachers to do careers, because if you're asking them, should I go into teaching as a career? They're brilliant at talking about that. But actually, how are they meant to really know? And so if you can start to find completely different ways to break down those barriers, and I think the brilliance of this is they are seeing for themselves what these different roles look like. So you're educating them. It's kind of literally train the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think then they can get a sense of how to tailor all of that back for their school. And I just think it's important. I think it's important for teachers to see, if you like, those end points, those destinations of roles that they're children and students might go into. And some of the work we've tried to do more recently around the Purpose Coalition is to look at, well, how might we knit together employees with their original schools and help their original schools get on and see what the employees are doing. And I think the teacher placement program for Curtains is just a brilliant example of trying something new, actually. And I think it'll be highly valuable because it is teacher development as well.
Exactly.
For the teachers.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth, it's great for the students that can, as you say, get this sense of what's actually out there. But it's great for the teachers, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I really hope it's something that's embraced kind of from the schools that we work with. But I'd love to think that other businesses can pick this up and say, actually, because we've got resources, we've got things that we're sharing that other businesses can say, maybe this could work for us as well. And that kind of, you know, for Curtains, that's very much a gender balance motivation. But I think the idea of breaking down any barriers, whatever that community might be that a business is trying to reach, the best way to that community is often through the school. And it's so adaptable to be able to go to different communities, different schools, and really try and engage the next generation of, you know, of the workforce.
And there are some really obvious bits of it that get changed, you know, when you start to fix that gender gap. And then there's some less obvious but really important bits. And one of the most obvious, I remember when we were getting some new, I think it was District Line trains in London, mm-hmm. and everyone was very excited. I mean, we were desperate for new, okay. new tube trains. And I got the chance to go and try one out. And I couldn't reach the things that hang down. And I was like, who was... It has to be only a man could think you could reach this high up into a tube train. And of course, so on the back of all of that testing, not just me, but others, other women, no doubt, they were made much lower. But I just... And it's really, really simple, but... It does matter.
It really matters. It matters what you're talking about there, what you're describing there is literal safety as well.
Yes.
You know, and that brings me back to, you know, thinking about the work that we've done around inclusive PPE.
Yeah,
this
totally.
Isn't just, and I don't want to undermine the point, but this isn't just about somebody feeling considered and you know, thought about. I think that's actually really important. But in addition to that, it's literally about the difference between life and death, being able to hold on to whatever they're called, the things that hang down on a tube. It's about keeping you safe so you don't go flying.
Yeah, and I think even now a lot of women in London say it's still not perfect. You're like scrunched in, you know, it's still quite hard to hold it. But you know, it's way better. But I just think it's a basic but powerful indicator of why this matters. You literally will not be able to power a company forward if only half the population are able to be, you know, be part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, you are always going to lose every day of the week compared to a company that is able to reach into the whole population.
Absolutely.
For its talent base. It is a really straightforward piece. And, you know, we've had the World Cup this year. It's this summer. And, you know, show me the England manager that wants to pick from a smaller squad. I'll leave it at that. For any blokes listening to this, you know. it's a no-brainer. It really is a no-brainer.
I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more. Right, Justine, I'm going to move us on to our kind of quick-fire, rapid questions then, okay? So tell me, if you could describe Curtains in one word, what do you reckon it would be?
I'm a bit torn. I think it might
go on. I'll give you two words if you need it.
Okay, thank you. I think one would be community, and
nice.
The other would be opportunity.
Very nice.
Because I thought about family actually. I think there's definitely something around the business that is about a family. It is about a community. It's about community. But also, yeah, it's fundamentally, I think, about opportunity too.
Interesting.
Those two things, yeah.
I like I prefer community to family, if I'm allowed to have an opinion on this, because I think in a community, you hold people accountable, right?
Yeah, and it's a broader concept.
Yeah,
it's a broader
exactly, and anyone's welcome.
Yeah, 100%. And so, yes, that's how I describe Curtains.
Brilliant, thank you. Okay, what about hidden talent? Tell us about hidden talent that you've got.
Well, I did think about whether to confess this, but I'm actually... I've been told that okay. I can be quite good at impressions.
Oh God. Are you going to allow me to ask you to do one?
Well, I've been known to do the occasional William Hague. But I've got a repertoire that goes beyond that, that normally doesn't come out anywhere close to the public environment.
Shall I ask you to do the next question and answer in your William Hague?
I'll never do that, Rhiannon. I think you may just have to wait. Anyway, right, let's...
nice, moving on. I'd love to hear about, like, your favourite thing to do, kind of away, perhaps away from work. What kind of, what would you choose to do on a day off, day to yourself?
Oh, well, look, so first of all, I think my first, I adore swimming.
Okay.
I don't get to do it as much as I like. I love water, I adore swimming. And whenever I'm on holiday, I'm in the pool, I'm in the sea. You know, I'd pretty much live in the water if I could. And I remember when I was little, one of my teachers wrote this poem for me, and it was, if Justine Greening could have one wish, it would be to swim like a fish. And actually, brilliant. Probably one of the more observed, well-observed comments about me from someone. So I love that. I just love being outside. You know, I'm a big... It's not about being a nature person, but I just adore... I love seeing the seasons come and go. I find in a world of chaos, the fact that, you know, the bluebell woods will always come out, and my favourite time of year is sort of April, May, when most trees are just about to go... Oof, the leaves are about to come out. Honestly, there's a bit of a sheen, isn't there?
Yeah.
For me, that's, if I'm thinking about well-being and, you know, what I find really restores me as a person, it's either being in the water and just by water, or it's probably, being out and about.
Yeah. I really hear that about seasons. I grew up in mid Wales, so kind of now I live in Liverpool, and it's a lovely leafy city, but it's still a city. But I often think back to, like, growing up in the country, you really felt the seasons change because you were surrounded by nature. And I think you're right, there's something very grounding, isn't there, about no matter what's going on, things still tick on, time still marches on, and the seasons are quite a nice reminder of that, I think.
It's quite a timeless thing in a world where almost nothing feels reliable.
Yeah.
So I think there's something about it that's to do with that, and how beautiful it is as well. And I think it's easy in this crazy world to switch on your TV and see all of the problems, but actually, you know, around us are some of the most beautiful plants and animals. And anyway, there you go.
Yeah, it's one of the privileges of living in the UK, isn't it, that we do see.
I think so.
We see the seasons.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Well, you're right. Well, I have often said when I was International Development Secretary, I used to say that, you know, there's a rainy season and a, you know, non-rainy
a less
season.
Rainy.
bit like a lot of Africa. We just have two seasons. It's rainy, not rainy. Theirs is obviously, you know, rainy and very sunny.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to bring us on to our final question then, Justine. So I'd like you to think about a year from today. What would you like that to look like? What would you like to be doing 12 months from now?
Well, I'll give you a social mobility like, seeing as that's what we're talking about. I would love it if some of these solutions that we are really pulling together now in places like Curtains, Teacher Placement Programme, and the other Purpose Coalition businesses, I would love it if a year from now we were seeing those wholesale starting to be adopted more broadly across the country. I'd love it if we were able to really get a policy environment that someone was saying, right, I'm going to pass a law that means all of this stuff can happen more easily, and actually great companies can have this race to the top that they really want. I'd hope for that, and maybe in a year I'd hope for more broadly maybe a bit more political stability, so that our political system can actually go somewhere for the public. I think that would be good if it could be able to really feel like it can make a difference again.
Well, let's check back in 12 months' time, shall we?
Or maybe I'll just be on holiday.
Or maybe any and all of the above. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to have you, Justine.
Thanks for having me. It's been fantastic. I've loved it. And I love having curtains part of the Purpose Coalition. So thank you for all of the difference and impact you're making.
Fabulous. Thank you.